This is the Quality News Network. In Lebanon, the border clashes between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas are in their ninth day. This evening, a large fight broke out in the Lebanese side of the border between Israeli special forces and Hezbollah guerrillas, which resulted in several Israeli casualties. There are hints that Israel may launch a full-scale invasion into Lebanon in the coming days. Israel is warning residents along a 20-mile stretch of the South Lebanese border to flee immediately. At the United Nations today, the Secretary General called for an immediate halt to the hostilities in the Middle East conflict, but admitted there were serious obstacles to reaching a ceasefire. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to travel to the Middle East next week to help find a diplomatic solution. So far, Lebanese officials say at least 306 people have been killed. Israeli representatives report that 29 Israelis have been killed, including 14 soldiers. In Beirut, 40 U.S. Marines have arrived to help with the evacuations of thousands of American citizens. Yesterday, about 900 Americans were evacuated on a luxury cruise liner. The first of those evacuees have begun to arrive by plane in the U.S. at Baltimore, Maryland's airport. In the Gaza Strip today, 3 Palestinians were killed in an Israeli offensive and 12 were wounded. In Iraq, the top Shiite cleric is urging his followers to stop the reprisal violence against the Sunnis. His statement comes as the U.S. military reports that daily violent attacks in Baghdad have increased 40%. On Capitol Hill today, an assistant secretary of state announced at a Senate hearing that at least one or more Iranians witnessed North Korea's recent missile test. U.S. officials are said to be worried about a deepening relationship between the two countries, both with nuclear ambitions. In Tehran, Iran's top security decision-making body said that the country will respond to the package of Western incentives aimed at halting its nuclear program by August 22nd. The Supreme National Security Council also warned that Iran would reconsider its nuclear policies if the United Nations imposes sanctions on the country. In Washington, President Bush may make another push to have John Bolton confirmed as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Last year, Mr. Bush made an interim appointment, which is set to expire in January. In Washington, President Bush addressed the NAACP for the first time in his presidency. He acknowledged there is persistent racism in the country. You're listening to QNN.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
In San Francisco, a judge is allowing a lawsuit against AT&T to go forward. A privacy rights group sued the company, saying it illegally cooperated with the U.S. government's domestic eavesdropping program. They are demanding that the program be stopped. Freddie Mac reports that nationwide, the average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is now 6.8%. That's a four-year high. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told Congress that the recently cooling housing market could contribute to slower economic activity overall. However, he said it appears to be orderly. The Labor Department reports that last week 304,000 Americans filed for jobless benefits. That's 30,000 fewer than the previous week. In the wake of recent vehicle recalls, Toyota is promising to increase their quality. Also today, Toyota indicated it's not interested in joining a proposed alliance between GM and Renault-Nissan. Toyota's president added that his company would not block such an alliance either. Ford is reporting a second quarter loss of $123 million, worse than had been expected by Wall Street analysts. Ford blames the loss on its dependence on high-margin SUVs, which are declining in popularity as customers look for more fuel-efficient cars. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.08 a barrel. And looking at Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is down 83 points, the Nasdaq down 41, the S&P 500 down 11. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Roll up your sleeves and put on your gloves, because the work is just beginning.
Monday warrior, me's right. Today's Tom Sawyer, me's right.
It's time to turn the conversation to taking back America. From the crusaders who have drained our treasury, created needless wars, and who expect the working people to pay for their billionaires' games, it's time for the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Brought to you by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They are building the American dream each and every day. You can get in on the program by dialing in to 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And now, your host, Bruce Birch.
Welcome to the Bruce Birch Radio Program, radio for a freer America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's about 7 minutes past the top of the hour. Today we're going to be talking about women's issues. So if you are a woman and you would like to get in on this show, you know, today is the day we want to talk about some of the things, some of the issues that are facing women out there. Later on in the program today, I'll have Sansara Taylor of World Can't Wait, who is staging a counter-demonstration against Operation Save America, which used to be known as Operation Rescue, the same outfit that spawned guys who would go shoot abortion doctors and who picket the abortion clinics with violent protest. And they're down there trying to counterbalance this. And I talked to her earlier today, and she's got some really exciting stuff to share with us in the struggle for women's rights in that area, and in privacy and health care. If you want to get in on the show today, again, you heard that at the top of the hour, it's the telephone number to get in on the program is 1-877-443-2366. Somebody's calling already, eh? You can also email me, Bruce at brucebirch.com, and you can also join us in the online experience of coming into our very own chat room at headonradionetwork.com. You can go there and click on the left-hand side of the page and pop into the chat room. There's a couple of us sitting in there right now, hanging out early this afternoon. But talking about some of these issues, is, I think, extremely important. Now, here on the program, we've covered a lot of stuff. We've talked about labor rights. We've talked about all kinds of progressive causes, veterans, you name it. We've talked about it. And today we're going to do women's issues. So if you're interested in that, please do get in on the program. Now, before I go too far into some of this, I did want to sort of cap off a couple of top stories that have come out this afternoon that are happening right now. Today, apparently, Lebanon has been told that they should evacuate southern Lebanon because the Israelis are going to be invading. So, just real briefly to run down this little story for you. Israel on Thursday told Lebanese residents to leave the southern sector of the country below the Latani River within 24 hours. The warning came a day after punishing airstrikes killed more than 50 people across Lebanon in the deadliest day since hostilities erupted on July the 12th. Apparently a large firefight between Israeli forces and Hezbollah guerrillas. I love how they do it. Israeli forces and Hezbollah guerrillas. How about it? A large firefight between Israelis and Lebanese broke out Thursday evening on the Lebanese side of the border, the Israeli army said, according to the Associated Press. The army said its forces suffered casualties in the firefight but did not elaborate. Al Jazeera is reporting that four Israeli soldiers died in the battle. Israeli forces cross the border as part of their operations to push back push back Hezbollah, who have continued firing rockets into northern Israel despite more than a week of massive Israeli bombing. So maybe Israel might be, of course they're not getting the picture just yet, but maybe we've learned a little bit. No matter how many bombs, how many thousands of tons of bombs you drop on people, they still have a will to fight back. Dig that, huh? Interesting. I'm not taking sides. I'm just saying. Now, having said that, also, in this situation, Israel apparently has been censoring some of their news people. Some news you may never hear about Israel's war against Hezbollah. If a missile falls into the sea, a strategic military installation is hit, or a cabinet minister is planning to visit the front lines, you won't hear about it, mainly because all these topics are subject to review by Israel's chief military censor, who has, in her own words, extraordinary power. She can silence a broadcaster, block information, and put journalists in jail. Colonel Sima Vonkin said Wednesday, "I can, for example, publish an order that no material can be published. I can close a newspaper or shut down a station. I can do almost anything." Well, good thing they have freedom of speech there, huh? I think it's pretty good. So, when you're getting your news coverage there from if you're getting it from an Israeli source, you know, do understand that they are definitely censoring, and that whatever happens, whatever is reported, possibly could be skewed to one side, namely the side that is reporting the news. So, all right. The other thing too, very quickly before we get on into the main portion of our program, apparently. Bill Clinton, that's right, Bubba, is out campaigning for Joe Lieberman. And I read this and I thought, you know, come on, man. You know, it's time to, you were president, it's time to go away. Apparently Clinton is going to be visiting Joe Lieberman and going to Connecticut to campaign for his to campaign for Lieberman on July 24th in Waterbury. And apparently a new Quinnipiac poll shows Lieberman and Ned Lamont, his primary challenger, in a statistical dead heat. Okay? Now, Lieberman's campaign has not yet revealed the details of the visit. The two politicians have apparently known each other since Clinton worked on Lieberman's first campaign for state senate in 1970, when Clinton was a student at Yale University. Clinton also recently defended Lieberman's position on the war in Iraq, saying he agreed with Lieberman that the U.S. should not set a strict timetable for withdrawing soldiers. Well, you know where I am on that issue. Get them out. Clinton also said that he thought it was wrong for Democrats to challenge one of their own. Oh, well, what's a primary for then, Bill? Hey, Bill, what's a primary for then? If that's not the time to challenge an incumbent, I mean, come on. Just because he's elected in office doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, this is the guy who open-faced kissed the president. Ugh. Okay, Bill. Well, you just went down 20 points in my estimation. You know, you're probably already pretty low, but now you've even sunk a little lower. Also in political news today, the fundraising organization that helped vault former Representative Tom the Hammer DeLay to Republican leadership has been fined for campaign finance violations and is shutting down. That's good news, folks. That's very good news. Under an agreement with the Federal Election Commission, Americans for a Republican Majority's Political Action Committee agreed to pay a $115,000 fine and close. The agreement resulted from an audit by the FEC of the committee's records for January 1, 2001 to December 31, 2002. The audit found DeLay's committee had not properly reported contributions, disbursements, and cash on hand. It also found that the committee failed to properly report outstanding debts and obligations and did not follow federal rules for paying for shared federal and non-federal activities. And ARMPAC is the Political Action Committee, and it's you know, one of the major reasons why DeLay became so powerful, because it was all about the money, and the money was in his little his Political Action Committee, Americans for a Republican Majority. So yes, Virginia, we are seeing the Republicans implode, and it's starting right there. Now look here, you know, Abramoff went down. I can't remember the other guy's name who was his partner there. Scanlon, yes, Michael Scanlon. He went down. Duke Cunningham's in prison. Catherine Harris, who is running for Senate, got caught illegally receiving $30,000 of money from the same people that Duke Cunningham was getting money from. And now we're seeing that the DeLay Political Action Committee shutting down because it broke the law. Imagine that. All of a sudden, we're beginning to see accountability occur. Pretty damned amazing. Glad to have you on with me today. It's almost 17 minutes past the hour here on the Bruce Burch Radio Program. If you want to get in on the show, you can dial 1-877-443-2366. I'll be back right after this break with our topic of the day, women's issues. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to WaterUseItWisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah!
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
We'll be right back.
right, you're back on the Bruce Burke radio program. Radio for a Freer America, right here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to be back on with you every day like I do. I get off on having radio, man, doing radio. It's really great. We're going to go over to our free speech phone lines. Now, if you want to get in on the show, you have that opportunity. We already have a caller on the line, and we're going to go ahead and take that call, and then we'll get into the topic today. You can call 1-877-443-2366 and be a part. Avail yourself of free speech today here on the radio program. Let's go over to the phones. Our good friend Jim is joining us. Jim, how are you doing, my friend?
Well, Bruce, I can barely hear you. How are you?
Sorry to hear that. Man, I'm doing great.
A little better. How's the weather down there?
The weather is a typical summer. It's a typical late July. It's damnable. It's hot. It's sticky, and it rains out of a clear blue sky occasionally. But other than that, it's doing okay.
Hey, as long as hail and fire don't come out of that clear blue sky, you're okay.
Or frogs, or something like something weird like that.
Yeah, exactly. All the plagues. It seems like they're coming. You know, talking about Israel, I don't think you're going to get much straight intelligence out of them. I mean, they preempted on, Lebanon because of those men who were kidnapped, I guess is the term. And, and this is something that we could have learned a lesson from, too, back when in our Iraq situation, When you start a preemptive war on somebody, I mean, I think there are five things that I remember that you need to do. You got to have achievable measures. You got to have security, intelligence, the actual strike, and finally, an executable exit strategy. And I just don't think Israel has these five components. It's not the way she did back in 1967.
Well, I would say that they were captured, not kidnapped, but that's just, where were they that they supposedly got kidnapped?
I don't know, but kidnapped, captured, I'm not exactly sure how they were taken into custody. That was the wrong word, captured then. So they're captured,
but
Israel is, I think, behaving as though they were kidnapped. I mean, basically,
right.
When you have a war or a conflict situation like that, you're going to have prisoners of war, and you're going to have all the things that go with that, But it was just a thought roaming around inside my brain.
Well, and I think, what I find to be interesting about this is that despite the heavy bombardment of southern Lebanon, Hezbollah is still... I mean, how can you... You cannot bomb the spirit out of the human being.
In
Iraq?
Even when Berlin was getting the worst of the Allied bombing, I remember seeing newsreels of bombed-out buildings with Nazi flags in them and signs saying, "You may break our walls, but not our hearts."
And the Blitzkrieg on London.
Exactly. They equally bore up pretty well. I mean, both cities were pretty badly hit. Berlin, of course, got the worst of it. It probably deserved it because they started it. But nonetheless, the bombing of London was started as an accident anyway because the Junker 88, sort of got off course. But that's either fish or fowl. Both cities stood an awful lot of pounding, and the people there, it took a lot to break their spirits, particularly Germans. They did, really.
And the other part of that too is that the more that this goes on, the angrier these people are going to get. I don't see any positive outcome from any military action in that part of the world.
Really, I
just don't see
it either. I mean, the 67 war, you could see exactly how that was fought, and the leadership the Israelis had was far superior to what they have now. I mean, Moshe Dayan and the other people who were, and Golda Meir, who were with the Israeli leadership back in the 60s, you don't have that type of leadership now. The current, I think, man in charge of Israel doesn't have a lot of military experience. And, the world's a little bit different situation. So we're going to have something that I think is going to be ongoing, and it's going to continue for quite a while. I just hope it doesn't break over or boil over into other areas involving, you know, escalations beyond a conventional weapon type situation. That's my abiding concern. It really is.
I think we should all be concerned about that.
Yeah, and about Catherine Harris. You mentioned her.
I certainly did.
She was taken to dinner by Duke Cunningham twice. The first dinner cost $2,200, and the second cost $2,800.
How much now?
This month's Vanity Fair has it in writing, and it's about corruption in Washington. Duke Harris, in the Duke's days of being the Duke, in the MIG ace, or whatever you want to call it, I can call him the MIG ass. But nonetheless, that was his vanity tag, was MIG ace. But anyway, he took Catherine Harris out to dinner in a place in D.C., and the dinner was $2,200. Now, I know that, you know.
$2,200.
I know that. And the second time he took her out to dinner was $2,800. Now, I know that Chateau Neuf du Pape is a good wine, and so is Chateau Lafite Rothschild. It's a good champagne and all that. But, I mean, they must have taken home the whole wine cellar or part of it. I mean, I've had dinner in Washington and other places, too, on both sides of the pond. Very good dinners at very good restaurants. And I've never had a bill like that. I just wonder exactly what they did have. I mean, $2,200 the first pop and $2,800 the second pop.
What does that tell you? That tells you, I think that...
She's up to this and, you know, up to her keister in all this stuff, too, you know?
Yeah, she definitely is. And I don't think she's got a snowball's chance in hell of winning the senatorial campaign down there. I mean, you know, even her... her campaign may very well even be under investigation at this point. I understand that her former campaign manager was interviewed by the FBI or by the FEC or somebody who is some sort of federal watchdog agency over campaign donations. So,
well, you know, as you said, these people start to implode, and like Icarus, they fly too near the sun. And you know what happened to him? He fell right into the sea because those wings were made of wax and they melted. And I think a lot of this same thing is happening to some of the Republican leadership who just thinks that they're above the law, invulnerable, and can't be reached or pulled down. But you know, I don't care who you are, there's always somebody there who can jerk the rug right out from under you.
Well, I think governing structure is based on corruption. How can it have any sort of realistic way of succeeding? It can't. I don't think it can.
Well, see, these people have a different sense of reality than other people. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and that's what they think they've had. And that's just my humble opinion.
And humble it is, my friend.
Anyway. I hope you have a good afternoon.
Certainly will. We're going to get into a different topic today. We're going to talk about some women's related issues.
Listen, give that big dog of yours a pet for me, will you?
I certainly will. I'm looking at him right now. He's
really?
Looking at me like, well, why do you keep talking into that thing?
Pardon me?
He always gives me a funny look when I'm doing the show. Like he thinks I'm talking to myself or something. Anyway, thanks for the call, Jim. Glad you got on the show today, and definitely look forward to hearing from you tomorrow. And that was our good friend Jim from West Virginia, somewhere up there. If you want to get in on the show today, you can do that. 1-877-443-2366 is the number, and you're listening to the Bruce Burch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
for Bob Kincaid. We didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Alberto Gonzalez didn't exactly catch a spear for Bush when he testified before the Senate on Tuesday. Asked by Arlen Specter why the Justice Department called off its own investigation of the NSA spying scandal, the Attorney General pointed his finger straight to the top. "Wasn't me. It was the president's decision," he said. Gonzalez then tried to put a sheen on it by saying Bush just wanted to limit the number of people who had access to the classified program. That's their line anyway, and they're sticking to it. Seems obvious, though, that the real motive was to stop any Justice Department investigation in its tracks, lest it reveal any illegality. Can you say cover-up? Zoe Lofgren can. The president's latest action, says the Democrat from California, shows that he's willing to be personally involved in the cover-up of suspected illegal activity. She's right about that. Bush's decision to deep six the Justice Department investigation should be added to the growing list of particulars on John Conyers' impeachment drafting table. Remember, the thing that got Nixon ultimately wasn't his role in the break-in, but his role in the cover-up. We should be so lucky this time. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I can feel no sense of measure, no illusions as we take refuge in young man's pleasure, breaking down the dreams we make real.
All right, you're back on the Bruce Birch radio program here on the Head On Radio Network. It's about 34 minutes past the hour or thereabouts, somewhere in that location. Today, primarily, you know, I wanted to get into talking some about women's issues. And primarily, you know, I got an interesting email, just a one-line email from apparently a listener or someone who was related to the show of in some form or fashion named, let's see here if I can pull it up, named Lana. Lana sent me an email regarding the women's equal pay. And let me just read you this. This is off of the AFL-CIO website regarding equal pay for women. Equal pay has been the law since 1963, but today, more than 40 years later, women are still paid less than men, even when they have similar education, skills, and experience. In 2005, women were paid 77 cents for every dollar men received. That's $23 less to spend on groceries, housing, health care, and other expenses for every $100 worth of work they do. Over a lifetime of work, the 23 cents on the dollar they're losing adds up. The average 25-year-old working woman will lose about $455,000 to unequal pay during her working life. And because they're paid less now, they have less to save for their futures and they earn smaller pensions than men. Half of all women with incomes from a pension in 2002 received less than $5,600 per year compared to $10,340 per year for men. That's a pretty big disparity. Those figures are even worse for women of color. African American women earn only 68 cents and Latinas 57 cents for every dollar that men earn. Asian and Pacific Islander women earn less also. Their pay inequality is less severe than for women as a whole, but they still earned only 88 cents for every dollar that men earned in 2000, the most recent year for which data is available. So, you look at this and you think, okay, so there's a law in the book. There's a law in the book that's been there since 1963. Regardless of that, the reality is not there. The reality is not there. Now, if you're interested in talking about this, give me a call. I'd love to hear from you and hear what your thoughts are on this. I'm just going to give you a real quick some state by state comparisons regarding this. In North Carolina, for instance, working women in North Carolina are farther along the road to equal pay than women in many states. In 2000. North Carolina's working women earned 81.2% of as much per hour as men, while nationwide women earned only 77.6%. And North Carolina ranked ninth among all states in equal pay. Well, that's it's cool. I'm glad North Carolina has that distinction. Although, it's still not quite up there where it needs to be. At the current rate of change, working women in North Carolina, where I live, won't have equal pay until 2048. Nationwide, women won't achieve equal pay at the rate of growth that is in place right now until after 2050. Okay. Let's see here. Let's do this. Let's look at, for instance, Ohio. Let's look at Ohio. Let me take a look here at Ohio real quick. In Ohio, working women earned 73.5% as much per hour as men, and at the current rate, they won't have equal pay until well after 2050. Ohio ranked 44th among all states in progress in closing the hourly wage gap. Let's take a look at West Virginia, where our home studios are. And in West Virginia, working women earned 74.2%, and that would be, let's see. Wow, the rate of progress in closing West Virginia's hourly wage gap was the best in the United States in 1990s. West Virginia ranks first among all states in progress in closing the hourly wage gap. At the current rate of change, working women in West Virginia won't have equal pay, though, until 2023. Although that's a lot better than the nationwide average of 2050. So there you go. There's some interesting factoids for you. If you're interested in checking this out, you can go to aflcio.org/issues/jobseconomy/women. /equal pay. You'll have to, that's a lot of slashes in it. Maybe I'll put up a link on our website. Working women are having a difficult time in a lot of different areas. And as we are looking at this, there's another fantastic organization out there called the Coalition for Labor Union Women that you should go check it out. Just Google that. Coalition for Labor Union Women, and you should be able to get right into their website and check that out. Now, also today, we'll have Sansara Taylor on the show to talk about some of the reproductive rights battles that are being waged. You know, this year, reproductive rights for women is under assault like never before, or I shouldn't say like never before, like it hasn't been in a long time. And, this has created, we talked a little bit about it yesterday in theocracy, Now let me just give you a little background as far as my own interest in this idea or in this entire deal. My mother, giving you personal information now, how about that? My mother received her doctorate in chemistry and physics in 1976 from Duke University here in North Carolina. And at that time, a woman receiving a doctorate was not unheard of. However, it still was not the norm, especially in the sciences. You know, in some of the more creative endeavors and some of the, like, the, you know, English or history, some of those areas, that was much more prevalent. But in the sciences, this was not something that women really sort of reached out to do. And, you know, and primarily because the sciences at that time were a very male-dominated field, even in universities, probably still is today to a great degree in universities. I remember growing up and going to many seminars of a lot of these professors and listening to lectures and looking around the room and realizing that, you know, mom was often the only woman on the dais. Up there in the front with all the people at the podium. Dais. Okay. And oftentimes, you know, when we would go to a lot of these lectures and functions, she was the only female scientist there. So, you know, today, you know, and this is back in 76. So I grew up sort of with the idea in mind that watching a woman break the gender barrier in a way that was very powerful and very impactful upon me. So, you know, my respect for and deferment, if you will, to the importance of women in the workplace and the importance of having the female perspective in many different areas is, you know, very, very, very much up there. My mother would not have it any other way. She raised me to be a very equal-minded soul in all areas. You know, so that's sort of from a personal perspective of why, you know, I would like to do, I'm doing this particular topic. According to the UN Development Fund for Women, most women throughout the world work in low-skilled, low-wage jobs. They are paid less than men in nearly every country in the world, and they work longer hours. Women account for 70% of the world's population living in poverty, even though they make up 45% of the world's workforce. Even in developed countries such as our country, the United States, women are working longer hours and making less than men. And you know, we just illustrated that, you know, with the disparity in pay. 77 cents on the dollar, $455,000 difference over a lifetime of working. My producer's asking me about the fact that West Virginia ranked first in the rate of change for women, and he says, reckon that might be because of West Virginia's larger-than-average union presence, and I would dare say yes. You know, I would say that the presence of a union where there is democracy in the workplace and where people and women and men and women, but women especially in some of the trades and some of the factories around the country. I know here in North Carolina, for instance, women are very much and you know, still in the companies that are still operating, but women were very much persons of choice to use in textile plants, in the weaving machines, and you know, sewing factories, and creating, you know, the spinning the cotton into thread, and then the thread into weaving into different cloth. Women, you know, they had, you know, of course there was a reason for that, and a lot of the reason was because women had smaller hands and could get into some of the places in the machines to fix things that men's large hands couldn't get in to do. And, you know, dare I say they're much more detail-oriented than men. My wife's very much more detail-oriented than I am. But, you know, and that's cool. I mean, we each, you know, men and women each have our different strengths. and you know, and that's you know why they work well together. Now, women account for, again, I said as I said before, they account for 70% of the world's population living in poverty. 70% out of 100% of the world's population living in poverty are women, even though they make up 45% of the world's workforce, less than half. Their work is often dangerous, and many women risk their lives each time they go to their jobs. In Juarez, Mexico, 370 young Mexican workers, young Mexican women, have been killed in the past 10 years. Many of them were killed just outside their workplace in maquilas, foreign-owned plants that multiplied along the U.S.-Mexican border after the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed in 1994. There you go. There's NAFTA. 370 young Mexican women have been killed in the past 10 years in plants that have multiplied along the U.S.-Mexican border after the North American Free Trade Agreement, and I dare say that a lot of those plants aren't U.S. corporate-owned plants. The free trade area of the America's Trade Pact, now being debated by big business interests behind closed doors, would spread the massive joblessness created by NAFTA throughout the Western Hemisphere and would have a detrimental impact on women workers. Of course, women are also likely to face additional threats on the job, such as discrimination, sexual harassment, physical abuse, and pregnancy exams as a condition of work. The union movement is working to try to ensure that all workers can feed their families and contribute to their communities. And I think that's fantastic. Now, you know, a number of these issues, and we're talking about labor right now, women's rights with regard to labor, you know, it really is, you know, an international situation. It's not just here in the United States, but around the world. You know, 6 million women in the Philippines, 20% of the working age population, migrate overseas as domestic workers, often working 7 days a week for substandard salaries and experiencing abuse and harassment. 90% of women workers in India are in the informal economy, working as street vendors, incense rollers, etc., with little protection for their rights under labor laws. Women active in the union movement in Colombia suffer the highest rate of assassination in the world. Women working in free trade zones in northern Mexico often must take pregnancy tests and may be required to take birth control pills as a condition of going to work. Women in the United States have no right to paid maternity leave, unlike women in every other industrialized country. No right to paid maternity leave. In the United Kingdom, more women are working at home as home-based workers, using their homes as their workplace with little regulation and few protections. As many as 30,000 women are trafficked into the United States each year to serve in the sex industry and to work in sweatshops. As many as 30,000 women every year. So, you know, I mean, if you want to talk about disparities, if you want to talk about issues, you know, we got problems there. All right, you know, I've run all the way through my break. Let's go ahead and take it, Zach. You listen to the Bruce Burch Radio Program, Radio for a Freer America. If you want to get in on the show, you too can avail yourself of your free speech rights by dialing 1-877-443-2366. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be right back.
You may find yourself living in a shotgun shack. And you may find yourself in another part of the world. And you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well,
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Back on the Bruce First radio program. It's about 5 minutes before the hour, and I know we got a ran through that break, and then we had, you know, just bang, right? Bang. Slammed through that break. I was reading some of this stuff, and it just blew me away, man. It just blew me away. I can't believe that still here in 2006, women are still having to fight to have equality in regard to the workplace. It blows my mind. It's something I cannot fathom. And the reason why I can't fathom it is because what I see is that there's a huge need. I mean, you know, all of us guys, all right, all the guys listening right now, all of you know, we exist only. No, I won't go there. But, you know, I mean, we got to have equality, and we got to bring, women up to a place where at least they're making the same amount of money, where at least they have the same rights to health care, where there's not a paternalistic view of them and their and you know, the role that they play in our society. And, you know, they shouldn't be treated the way that they're being treated. You know, it just really, it's disheartening to hear about the brutality and the killings and, you know, what's gone on in the maquiladoras, in the assembly plants along the U.S.-Mexico border. It just blows me away. How many women have been killed there? And there's definitely a need for you know, better union representation in many of these plants. But, you know, can they get it? Or are they going to be killed, as women are in Colombia, for trying to organize? You know, and how does that reflect on what we, you know, we purport ourselves to be enlightened? You know, if it were up to this present government that's in power right now, the Rick Santorums, the Samuel Alitos, the George Bushes, you know, women would be back in the kitchen making cake and cookies and, you know, bringing you, your afternoon brandy before dinner or whatever it is. I don't, you know, I wouldn't want a woman to be doing that. I want her to be out there on the front lines with me making change, man. Anyway, the government, when they got, and you know, just privatizing, let's look at this. This is, here's an interesting thing from Ireland. When the government decided to contract out all support services in Northern Ireland hospitals, the jobs of 11,000 workers, most of them women, were at stake, and so was the ability to provide health care. It seemed a foregone conclusion that jobs would be lost, and the low-wage women workers felt unable to confront the international health conglomerate that intended to buy many of the hospital services. But Unison, the Union of Public Sector Employees, led by Inez McCormick, fought a year-long battle based on showing the unseen value of women's work in health care and building alliances within the community and with unions in the United States and Europe. The women trade unionists confronted the company at its annual general shareholder meeting. They saved the hospitals and developed a new generation of women leaders. Fantastic. And that's the kind of stories that we need to, you know, that I want to hear, you know. But men need to let go. Men need to let go. Men, specifically, I'll say it. I'll say it. Might make some of you angry, but I'll say it. Specifically, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant men who would desire their women to be seen and not heard, who would desire their women to give up any and all rights they have to their reproductive systems, to their bodies, to their bodies, especially those men who look at women as playthings or something to be used and not to be honored. You know, you're repugnant, every one of you. And you have no place in this society except for to be, you know. It just makes me so angry. And why it makes me angry is because of a lot of the barriers my own mother faced in trying to, further her education and further her desire to become a scientist. And we're running right up at the top of the hour. If you want to get in on the show today, actually right after the top of the hour, hopefully we will have our friend Sansara Taylor, who will be reporting directly from Jackson, Mississippi, where the Operation Save America, which used to be known as Operation Rescue, is trying to shut down Mississippi's last abortion clinic. We'll hear from her after the top of the hour. This is Bruce Birch. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network. I'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. In Lebanon, the border clashes between the Israeli military and Hezbollah guerrillas are in their ninth day. The Israeli army has conducted limited ground operations in southern Lebanon to take out Hezbollah tunnels and weapons for the second day in a row. Meanwhile, Israeli planes continue to bomb Hezbollah strongholds in Beirut's southern suburbs. More Hezbollah rockets continue to be fired into northern Israel. At the United Nations today, the Secretary General called for an immediate halt to the hostilities in the Middle East conflict, but admitted there were serious obstacles to reaching a ceasefire. There's concern over the developing humanitarian crisis, which involves an estimated 500,000 people fleeing Lebanon. About 130,000 civilians have fled to Syria. 45,000 still need assistance, according to the UN. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to travel to the Middle East next week to help find a diplomatic solution. So far, Lebanese officials say at least 306 people have been killed. Israeli representatives report that 29 Israelis have been killed, including 14 soldiers. In Beirut, 40 U.S. Marines have arrived to help with the evacuations of thousands of American citizens. Some evacuees are leaving aboard the USS Nashville, which can carry 1,200 of them to Cyprus. Yesterday, about 900 Americans were evacuated aboard a luxury cruise liner. In Iraq, the top Shiite cleric is urging his followers to stop the reprisal violence against the Sunnis. His statement comes as the U.S. military reports that daily violent attacks in Baghdad have increased 40%. On Capitol Hill today, an Assistant Secretary of State announced at a Senate hearing that at least one or more Iranians witnessed North Korea's recent missile tests. U.S. officials are said to be worried about the deepening relationship between the two countries, both with nuclear ambitions. In Washington, President Bush addressed the annual convention of the NAACP for the first time in his presidency. He said he wants the Republican Party to improve relations with black voters, and he also urged the Senate to renew the Voting Rights Act. The heat wave continues throughout much of the U.S. as well as Western Europe. So far, 16 U.S. deaths in seven states have been blamed on the heat. In Afghanistan, the U.S. military will pay $112,000 to victims of a traffic accident in May that sparked riots on the streets of Kabul. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have business news coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
In San Francisco, a judge is allowing a lawsuit against AT&T to go forward. A privacy rights group sued the company, saying it illegally cooperated with the U.S. government's domestic eavesdropping program. In Washington, a new report finds that more than 1.5 million Americans are hurt every year because of drug errors. According to the Institute of Medicine, these mix-ups also cost $3.5 billion a year. Google reported its second quarter earnings were $721 million. That's higher than analysts had expected. Yesterday, rival Yahoo lost 22% of its stock value, or about $10 billion, when it announced it was postponing a significant change in its advertising formula. In the wake of recent vehicle recalls, Toyota is promising to increase their quality. Japan's top automaker has recalled more than 1 million vehicles this year in Japan. Yesterday, the company announced 400,000 SUVs in the U.S. were being recalled. Ford is reporting a second quarter loss of $123 million, worse than had been expected by Wall Street analysts. Ford blames the loss on its dependence on high-margin SUVs, which are declining in popularity. Consumer Reports lists the worst American cars of 2006. They include the Pontiac Grand Prix sedan and Ford E-Series van. Light sweet crude settled at $73.08 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 83 points, NASDAQ down 41, S&P 500 down 11. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Thank you. time for another hour of Conversation Radio on the Head On Radio Network. Where the callers are the experts. You're back with the Bruce Birch Radio Program. With your host, Bruce Birch.
Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Union carpenters and union millwrights who are, you know, they're earning a good wage and they're taking care of business up there, and you know they're doing that by helping to bring you a different reality every day through the Head On Radio Network and their support of us, doing a fantastic job of that. You know, I am was going to be talking about women's issues today, and you know, I'd like to hear from some of you guys if you're out there and you want to talk about some of the things that are going on. Would love to hear from you. You can dial 1-877-443-2366. That's the telephone number to get you into the studios of the Head On Radio Network there in West Virginia. Trying to find out something here. It just blows me away. We were talking about some of the stuff that's going on with women in the economy, and you know, looking at how not only with women workers, but with healthcare. You know, women are dealing with a number of issues regarding that as well, and of course. You know, I've read an article recently about a woman who is actually a lesbian, and she had a partner in California. When she went to go be conceived, she wanted to have a child, and she went to a fertility clinic I'm not sure exactly. Never really dealt with that before. Anyway, point being is that she went to a clinic to become inseminated with sperm so that she could have a child, and had to take some fertility drugs. And the doctor, who was her clinician, said to her, "Yes, I'll help you with the fertility drugs. However, I will not inseminate you because it is my belief that because you're a lesbian, you shouldn't have a child. So it's okay if the lesbian goes out and has sex with a man and gets pregnant, but it's not okay for her to you know, be true to her partner and do it the way that a lot of other women who are heterosexual become impregnated. It's not okay to do that." Now, you know, is that a women's rights issue? Absolutely. If the roles were reversed, I seriously doubt that would be the situation. I was hoping to have Sansara Taylor on the line at this point, and I'm not. oops, not seeing that there is. I'm sorry. Not seeing that there's anyone on the line. I really want to bring you some more news around this, but hopefully we'll get her on the show here shortly. I'm going to go ahead sorry, this is bad radio right now. Hold your ears. It'll be all right. Anyway, all right. Getting back over to the topic at hand. Sorry about that. Had to send my producer a message. You know, there are a number of things that are going on in that area. We just talked about that for a second. You know, the other thing that I want to talk about too is the fact that we have a situation regarding women with how oh my goodness, that just didn't work at all either. On how the rights are being denied to women. We talked a little bit about some of the stuff that's going on around the world regarding women and rights with working rights, et cetera. And, you know, it really is kind of amazing to me that how it when you look at some of the things that have happened, that this has been allowed to be happen. This is allowed to happen. Have we not grown enough yet as a society where we can look at our female counterparts and decide as a society that it's time to do everything we can to support them in their movement? Now, there are many, many men, you know, who would say that the women's movement isn't necessary any longer. There are many men who would say that the women's movement is no longer something that is, you know, necessary in this society, that we've already grown enough. Well, these are some of the same women or some of the same men who would say probably in Texas, for instance, that racism is no longer an issue and we don't need to have a Voting Rights Act any longer. Even though there were more disparities in the voting rights violations from 1983 to the present than from 1965 to 1983. So, okay, yeah, here we go. We got Sansara Taylor on line one, and Sansara is down in Jackson, Mississippi. And Sansara, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, how are you doing down there? You know, you're dealing with a pretty unruly bunch, from what I'm understanding. Operation Save America. What is this group that's trying to close? I think it's the last abortion clinic in Mississippi.
That's right. Operation Save America. They are sort of a Christian fascist stormtrooping type organization. They used to be called Operation Rescue, and they've come to Mississippi from all over the country to close down the one last abortion clinic that remains standing in the state. And they are outside in front of the clinic every day with these huge, graphic, disgusting, distorted, and misleading pictures, bloody pictures of alleged fetuses, trying to traumatize the communities around Jackson as they drive past this clinic. Harassing the women who come in, you know, they yell at the women that they're still going to be mothers, just mothers of dead babies. They do things that are really emotionally traumatizing, in an effort to get media attention and to actually push the envelope around banning abortion outright nationwide. And of course, this is taking place in the context of a coming, you know, a coming to decision point at a certain point about Roe v. Wade. We've seen our first two statewide bans on abortion. So Operation Save America grasps that they are doing this media stunt targeting the last clinic in Mississippi at a time when the question of whether women will have abortion, whether women are going to have birth control, and what role women are going to play in society is really up for decision in the next period, you know. And so I came down here with the World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime movement. We also came from all over the country to say no. You know, we're drawing a line from D.C. to, from Jackson to D.C. against theocracy, right, and against this whole direction, yeah.
Well, now, so they're out there every day. What kinds of tactics, I mean, besides standing there with the signs, have they been? You said, let me backtrack for a second. You said that there are two states where abortion has already been outlawed. One of them is South Dakota, right?
Yes.
Okay, and the other would
Louisiana
be...
Louisiana also passed a ban, okay, on abortion.
Wow.
And there's several other states that have them pending. So, you know, this is, you know, in the quote-unquote pro-life movement, I have to put them in quotes because that's not really what they are, sure, there's really a feeling of victory, that it's just a matter of time before they win the battle against abortion. And in a lot of ways, they've moved on already. to targeting birth control, and I can talk more about that. But just to answer your question about Operation Save America, who they are and what they're doing, they are an organization who's, you know, under an earlier name, Operation Rescue, have been around about 15 years. They have a history of associating with doing these violent clinic blockades, going from clinic to clinic around the country, creating a lot of media attention, harassing women, terrorizing doctors. They publish posters with the photographs and home addresses and daily travel routines of different abortion providers. And they distributed these, including the people who later went on to kill abortion doctors. So they are associated with people who have done those kinds of things, and then they're also associated with people who go into the power structure, up into government and up into influential lobbyists on government. One example would be Tony Perkins, who's the head of the Family Research Council, the guy who led the three Justice Sunday events around George Bush's Supreme Court appointees. 14 years ago, he could be found. Nobody had ever heard of Tony Perkins, but he was out there, the Operation Rescue clinic blockade in Baton Rouge. You know, 14 years later, Tony Perkins is one of the most influential people. He's a Christian fundamentalist, theocrat, who's helping to vet the Supreme Court, and that clinic in Baton Rouge is closed down. So this is, you know, Operation Save America has its ties to the extremists who will go and pull the trigger, and to those in power who will come in afterwards. Once public opinion has been created through their outrageous tactics on the streets, they'll come in afterwards and say, okay, well, we're not as extreme. They'll act like they're not as extreme as the street protesters. We're just going to pass another restriction. We're just going to do a parental consent. We're just going to shut down this clinic for a violation on the width of their halls. You know, they are the ones who come in behind, and there's sort of a pattern where people become inured because they see these Operation Rescue types on the street, that then they don't reject these laws that they would have rejected otherwise. And so this is some of how they work. And then the other thing about Operation Save America is they, in some ways, they do us a favor because they put their whole program out there in a way that the people in the power structure, Bush and others around him, try to keep it a little bit more polite in the way they put it out there. Sure. But Operation Save America, if they'll go to high schools, public high schools, they'll be trespassing in public high schools and harassing gay students, bringing their gruesome, you know, fetus posters, their God hates fags posters, and their Bible quotes, and talking about how Jesus needs to reign and gay straight alliances need to be kicked off of campus. And they've been successful in creating precedents that go around the country then. They also came this week. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, are they related? Are they in cahoots with Fred Phelps of the Westboro Baptist Church group that goes around and protests at military funerals, or?
Well, you know,
at all?
Phelps, yeah, I think Operation Rescue is actually they're Phelps. I don't know as much about his connections. He seems to me, I could be wrong, but he seems to me more somebody who is really way out there. And not so connected to the power structure, whereas you have, I mean, he's very harmful, and the public opinion he creates is very damaging. But you have somebody like Operation Save America, and I actually think that they're a highly funded organization. They have, you know, their tentacles nationwide, they're organizing among churches, and they have connections up into the halls of power, and up into, you know, people like Pat Robertson have associated with them. People, they're not fringe lunatics who are never going to be taken seriously. They are people who...
They're mainstream lunatics, right.
Yeah, and they're people who batter down the doors and then they have cause to expect that the laws will follow them. And so I would say they're actually just as lunatic as Phelps, but more, probably more dangerous in that their connections to power. The other thing about them, I just think it's really important for people to know, is that their offices in, I believe they're in North Carolina, where their offices were donated to them by a group, the Lincoln Log Cabin International, whose CEO was a leader of the Indiana Klan, the Ku Klux Klan there. And they have right outside their office door in their building, they have a big picture of George Wallace hanging on their wall. So these are people who, you know, they really do show you the whole history of when they say traditional family values, and I think this is important, and they reveal this connection, when Bush says it, it means the same thing, but he won't admit it this way. That is a language that was developed not only, if you think about the traditions of this country towards patriarchy, male supremacy, but there's also a whole history of white supremacy, and that's, you know, traditional values, when it first started to emerge in the South among Republicans, that was code language in a lot of ways for racism when it became unacceptable to speak openly about segregation. And this is something a lot of people don't know. They think family values, it's about abortion, it's about birth, it's about gay marriage, which is the issues that they're making hot right now. But the traditions of this country, if you want to reinforce them, are traditional marriage even. You know, you can't have interracial marriage if you go way back in the traditions of this country. So I think Operation Save America actually brings that all together. And in that way, I say they kind of do us a favor, because a lot of people don't see it in the Bush administration, but they can see it in an organization, some of their foot soldiers like this group here in Jackson this week.
How many people are representing them there?
You know, they have probably about 40 people at the clinic every morning. They probably have 60 or 80 people in town from around the country. And then they have a church out in Pearl, which I've been told, I haven't been out there, but I've been told this is sort of a white, more reactionary suburb outside of Jackson. So that's where they've sort of been preaching in a church there. They probably have people from the community who've been coming out and hearing them.
You described some of the actions. Now, how else are they affecting women's, right to their own health care?
Well, one other thing about their actions, they also tried to go down to downtown and they tore up a Quran and they tried to set it on fire, but they didn't have the right permits for that. They also were going to burn a gay pride flag. So these are people and the reality is every time the Quran has been desecrated and it's made news, this is not only inflamed the bitterness of people in the Mideast, it's actually cost people their lives through some of the upset that's been fueled through these kind of provocative actions. So these are people who knowingly would like to provoke a holy war, a crusade, and they think that the U.S. has to conquer for Jesus, and so they bring the whole program together. Around women, they preach openly, and I think, you know, they preach openly biblical literalism, and that it ought to be the law of the land, and in that, they will openly uphold the passage in the Bible that says the woman should be unto the husband as the husband is unto the Lord, meaning the woman should be the obedient servant of the man and obey, just as man should obey the Lord. And I think, you know, they actually have held prayers outside of clinics where they say, "Oh Lord, please break this curse that has gotten into women's hearts that tells them that they don't need their men. Break this curse of independence that's in women's hearts." Their T-shirts say that feminism is a rebellion against God. So you get a taste of, you know, really what they're like, an American Taliban in their view of women's roles. Yeah.
I mean, I'm laughing, Sinsar, because it sounds to me, I mean, it's just completely ridiculous. I just, oh my God. Now, what kind of impact are they having on the public there? I mean, are you able to gauge at all the public support or lack of it for these folks?
Well, here's the thing. This is very interesting because we have been going out very broadly among people, and in particular among black people here in Jackson. And this is, it's complex because on abortion, I'll just be honest, there's a lot of people who are very religious and have, because of the church, been convinced that there's something wrong with abortion. And because of the way politics are framed in this country, and because of the way the media works, and because of the way the Democrats are offering absolutely no counterweight or opposition to this, you know, restriction of abortion these days, you have a lot of people who have never even thought about the fact that their personal views on abortion might be different than what they would think should be legislated. In other words, you know, you have people who say, "I'm pro-life," and you say, "Okay, but do you think abortion should be illegal? Do you think women who have abortion should go to jail?" And they'll say, "Oh, no." But they've never been asked that question. They actually, you know, their religious impulses are preyed upon, pardon the pun, to get them mobilized for a reactionary program. And so we'll go out, and this is actually, we'll go out, and we've found people who are hugely disgusted with, angered by, and outraged about the Bush administration, from their unjust wars to the way they handled Katrina in particular down here. There's a lot of people with family who were abandoned or died or are still struggling to get their home back or have never even made it back home. Or around some of the other crimes of the Bush administration, people are very upset. And then you have around some of the religiously framed issues around gay marriage, around abortion, you have, this is where, you know, the people who are in league with the Bush program have tried to court people and suck them into a program that actually cuts against their overall interests. And so this is one of those things that we've been going out and actually drawing the connections. There is a connection between the fact that because the reason I say this is because people's first impulse, a lot of them when they see these protesters on the news, is to think, well, they're a little extreme, but I think they're probably, you know, doing something good. Because,
right,
you know, they are saying the word, they have the Bible in their hands, and they're talking about babies. But then when we go out and talk to people, and we reframe the question, and we actually challenge them and show them what this program is a part of, how far they want to take it, and how it's connected to the power structure, people will actually very quickly get disgusted by that, which is one of the reasons why we felt it was so important to come down here, so that they didn't have a chance to do a one-sided show.
Sansara, I got to take a break. Can you hold over to the other side of the break?
Sure.
Okay, great. I want to talk a little bit more about some of the things you guys are doing and how this is affecting the folks who are down there. What kind of impact it's having? You're listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program on the Head On Radio Network. I've got on the line Sansara Taylor. We're talking about Operation Save America and their gruesome, crazy, ridiculous, ludicrous activities down in Jackson, Mississippi. Stick around. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about this for a little bit longer right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Tax the rich, feed the poor, don't
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider, someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Here's a test for you. Listen and identify the following water-saving devices in your home. Ready? That's the sound of water-saving device number 54, your toothbrush. Turning the water off while you brush your teeth saves more than 1,000 gallons a year. Next, that's your clock. Water-saving device number 23. Use it to reduce your shower by 5 minutes and save nearly 9,000 gallons a year. Try this one. Right, it's water-saving device number 83, your washing machine. Washing full loads of laundry or dishes can save thousands of gallons of water each year. Last clue. That's you, logging on to wateruseitwisely.com, a fun website filled with hundreds of water-saving tips from your local water utility and the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water. Use it wisely.
Planet Check.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now, yes I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
I've seen you in the markets, I've seen you in the streets, and at your political conventions, talking of your crusade, talking of your nation, and other things too terrible to mention. And you proclaim your Christianity, you proclaim your love of God, you talk of apple pie and mine. I've just got one question, and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb?
All right, you're back on the Bruce Burch radio program. It's about 31, almost 32 minutes past the hour, and on the line with us we have Sansara Taylor of World Can't Wait. And Sansara is down in Jackson, Mississippi, dealing with and providing a countervailing influence to Operation Save America, which used to be Operation Rescue, the ones who run around with the pornographic posters of just insanity. Sansara, I got to tell you before we get, thank you for rejoining me, but I got to tell you, I'm really glad that you're down there doing what you can to try to provide an alternative to their insanity.
Well, I am too. You know, while you bring that up, I will say what we have found going out. This is part of a bus tour. Being here in Jackson, okay. The World Can't Wait Drive Out the Bush Regime has launched a bus tour that started over the 4th of July weekend in New Orleans, standing with the victims there, the displaced people who are struggling to get their homes back, and traveling up through military bases, going and talking to GIs, active duty GIs, traveling up here to counter Operation Save America this week, and then going through a lot of the quote-unquote red states and going and connecting with people and challenging this whole atmosphere and direction and mobilizing people for October 5th, which is a national mass day of resistance to bring the Bush program to a halt. But what we found going out is that there are a lot of people who are disgusted, alienated, and suffocating. And it's meant so much for them to have people come in. We had a meeting last night where people got together from Jackson off of the outreach that we've been doing and sat in a meeting together and just went back and forth talking about one young man. It was a very heavy story. He says, you know, he is gay and he lives here in Jackson. And he said, you know, he has hardly left his house in the last year because it is so difficult. Everywhere he goes, he says, I can't even go to a gas station and fill up my tank with gas without hearing somebody preach to me about Jesus saves, Jesus loves. And he says, you know, and the more they preach at me and the more they high and mighty they get about their preaching, the more vicious they'll be as soon as you walk out the door and they'll start talking about you. And it's just so degrading to his spirit to be in this atmosphere that he said, you know, I think in 10 years I'm going to look back and I'm going to wonder what I did with my life. I'll be one of those people who feels like I missed my chance, but I can't bring myself to go out there. And I think, you know, he's just one example. Then we went out and we talked to people who were Katrina survivors, who you know, we went out to some of the projects here, where there's a state of emergency. Everybody's supposed to be afraid to go out among the black community here in Jackson, but we went out and it's another demonization of people who are oppressed. And so we went out and people were telling us their stories. They had never been asked. Nobody had ever reported on the full stories of what they had experienced. And I just think that there are people who are looking and waiting for somebody to come and connect with them and say, okay, we're finding you all and we're gathering you all up and we're going to step out and stop living in the shadows and keeping these sentiments to ourselves and actually start making them what's determining how the future turns out. And so part of why we've been doing this, you know, here in Jackson is because of Operation Save America, but nationwide because people, we have a window, we do have time to act and to stop the crimes of this Bush administration before we get consolidated into a fascist empire, into a theocracy, which we're very close to. We're moving there fast, you know. Bush vetoed stem cell research. That's another insanity in 2006, you know. But we're actually encouraging people to do this themselves. Hop in a car, go to worldcan'twait.org and download our call for the World Can't Wait that talks about the crimes of this administration and what kind of struggle it's going to take for people to bring it to a halt. And take a bunch of copies, go to a neighboring town and just go and leaflet in downtown or hand them out to people in the library or go door to door and find people and let them find you, because we're really in a time that there's nobody we have to rely on but ourselves, and people have to take this up. And we have found everywhere we've gone that not just Bruce Burst thanks us for it, but actually people are so welcoming. So I think it's really a time that this is important to do.
I think it is, absolutely. And, you know, I actually the show that I did yesterday was on theocracy. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. and how close we are to seeing institutionalized theocracy with the whole faith-based movement, where there's a lot of federal dollars that are being funneled to religious institutions to do things such as Operation Save America.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a concerted effort from the thugs on the right wing, the Reich wing, who are, you know, who have plans, and their plans are to again push women back into the kitchen.
Yep.
You know, and to try to demobilize any sort of progressive movement that's happened over the last 40 years. Now, you said you went out and you're able to actually even see some and talk with some Katrina survivors. What is their opinion on, or if you're able to tell me this, what is their opinion on, you know, on what's happening with with the push against abortion? Is this an issue that they see as synonymous with their struggle?
Well, it's not a connection that people make immediately, but it is one that people can grab a hold of when we are out there and talking to them. And the call for the World Can't Wait connects these things.
Sure.
That's sort of where we're proceeding from and bringing that to people. And we've met a lot of people who've spoken very bluntly to us about their own experiences getting pregnant when they didn't want to be. Some of them chose to keep the baby, and some of them chose to get an abortion. And it's actually been quite remarkable how many people have just, to complete strangers coming up to them, to people like us, have told us their stories and what they went through and how they struggled. And I think it's an interesting historical phenomenon in this area. Something that I've learned since being here is, especially among Black people, there is an understanding on a basic level of the fact that people can use Christianity to do very harmful things or hide behind the Bible to do harmful things. And when we were talking about, you know, Operation Save America and what their real program was, we had a number of people actually say, okay, that's how the Klan used to be. They, you know, they are still are too, you know, but they declared themselves Christian. And so there were people who were not so thrown by the fact that they were reactionaries using the Bible, even while they themselves consider themselves Christian. They were able to make a distinction there. So that was something interesting. That's not specifically Katrina survivors, but there is, you know, I'm learning some things about the South while I'm here too. And you know, with the Katrina survivors in particular, I think there's a general, there's texture and there's nuance and there's complexity, but some of the things that I've observed talking to people is that a very deep level of distrust for the government and suspicion about anybody at this point acting in their, whether anybody is actually acting in their interest or even cares what they think. And so on this question of abortion, I think there's distrust too, even while there's oftentimes at first sympathy, religious or before, because frankly people have been lied to about what fetuses are. A lot of people haven't really learned a lot of science or learned a lot about their own biology, and so they're relying on the way that the things have been framed by the politicians and the media. So there's work to be done, I guess I'm saying, but the connections can be made, and when we go out and talk to people, we've found, and not to give the wrong impression, we've also found people who've been very upfront about how important the right to abortion is, and have spoken right. out, and even started arguing with their friends on the spot who were disagreeing with them.
Now, you guys have been doing some actions down there as well. What kinds of actions has now? You're representing World Can't Wait, and what other organizations are there to provide a countervailing influence?
Well, the National Organization for Women, the Jackson chapter, has been very active. They actually put out a call for people from around the country to come down and stand against Operation Save America all week, which was great. We've come down and we've been working with them. Feminist Majority sent some people down. The local ACLU has been involved, and then a number of community organizations. So a lot of people have actually stepped out and challenged and denounced Operation Save America. We all did a protest for choice for abortion rights for women in a park downtown last Saturday to launch the week. And then since then, the World Can't Wait Drive Out the Bush Regime movement has been at the clinic every morning just across the street holding signs to make sure that there is a presence of people who say, no, keep the doors open. We're against the theocracy from the streets of Jackson to D.C. And then National Organization for Women, the World Can't Wait movement, and others have been doing, fanning out and doing canvassing and outreach and really going and hitting the pavement to talk to people. Tomorrow morning, we're holding a speak out and a rally on the steps of the Capitol downtown against theocracy and bigotry. And then on Saturday, National Organization for Women has organized a march that's going to start at the fairgrounds and march downtown Jackson to make it known that people here, are standing against this whole theocratic program.
Sure. How many people do you, just estimate for me, how many people, you said there's about anywhere from 40 to 60 folks who were down there for the Operation Save America. How many folks are down there with the side of good sense?
Well, there was about 200 people who came to the rally last Saturday, but then a lot of them were from out of town and they went back home. Staying all week, there's, probably a couple dozen local organizers and a couple dozen, maybe a dozen or 20 people from, probably like 20, 25 people from out of town. And also Anti-Racist Action has been real involved up here. So they've been out at the clinics and stuff too. So, it's a fair number of people, but then again, part of what I think our strength is that we've actually been going to the people of Jackson. And I think we have a basis to go to them, whereas the Operation Save America people have been hiding out in this church in more of a white reactionary suburb. And, they just don't have the same basis to go out and talk to people and draw them forward on their side that we do here in Jackson. So that's sort of where we've been putting our emphasis. We actually ran an ad today, the World Can't Wait did, in the Clarion Ledger, the local newspaper. We did a quarter-page ad that announced tomorrow's events and Saturday's protests, and it says, your government is torturing people right now. Your government is waging an unjust war. Your government is moving to end abortion and birth control rights for women all around the world. These things are happening, and you have to step out and be about stopping them. So we've reached out very broadly, and this is read by thousands of people in Jackson and the area, and we're hoping that a lot of them will come out and join us tomorrow in the streets.
Now, why is this such a flashpoint now? I guess would be my next question. Why is there such a need now to combat? Is there legislation pending in Mississippi, or what's going on?
Well, I've been told that there is a ban that's being worked up, a proposed ban on abortion in Mississippi. But I think that to understand fully why this is such a flashpoint, the lens has to be pulled back even more than Mississippi and to look at the whole national stage right now. where we have seen two statewide bans on abortion. We have under Bush, since Bush became president, we've seen a torrent. More than 2,000, or almost 2,000, not quite 2,000, a little bit under 2,000 pieces of legislature that have been introduced, restrictions, bans, other kinds of ways of tampering with and restricting abortion access nationwide have been proposed. Hundreds of them have been passed. The most notable are these two statewide bans. But earlier you said this thing about, are we going to go back 40 or 50 years for women? And I think that's a big part of the question, but I think it's important to grasp that what we are looking at with the Bush administration is it's not just the dark ages, not just going backwards, but it's a high-tech dark ages. It's going backwards socially with all of the repressive apparatus and police state apparatus of the high-tech ages today. And I think it's important. We're not just talking about sending women back to the emergency rooms with perforated uteruses and, you know, back alley butchers. We're talking about already we have two states have sent women and their partners to prison for out of their own desperate situations where they self-induced an abortion. They couldn't get one legally or safely or without shame, without feeling that they had to tell people that they didn't feel comfortable telling. So they self-induced an abortion. And then with these new fetal protective laws that have been passed in various places around the country, they ended up in jail. Instead of the government coming in and saying, oh my God, how did this happen? That a woman is back and taking harsh chemicals or giving herself an abortion, her life is in danger, she ends up in the hospital, let's get her care, let's open up safe clinics. No, they say let's throw her in jail. This happened in I believe, South Carolina. And then in Texas, there's a young man, 17 years old, he and his girlfriend got pregnant. She was terrified to tell her parents, so she asked him to step on her abdomen. Very dangerous to her. Something that nobody, a choice nobody should ever have to make. So he did. They did it together. And he's in jail for life. This is not a cruel act that he did. This is not an aggressive, you know, act against some stranger and, you know, something that somebody belongs in jail for. This is a situation that nobody should ever have to be in. But this is the direction we're going in. You have people like Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, senator there, who's openly advocated executing abortion providers. You have people like the National Right to Life movement that holds their protests on Roe v. Wade every anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Last year they had a protest, and the lead organizer of it did a whole thing about how when Roe v. Wade is finally overturned, when we finally criminalize abortion, we are going to have Nuremberg trials. That's what she said. Now, the Nuremberg trials, leave aside the fact that Hitler actually was the father of the right, quote-unquote, right-to-life movement. Hitler outlawed abortion. You know, this is the reality. It is a fascist program that they're mimicking. But here's the Nuremberg trials. The people who were found guilty were executed. This is the clear symbolic language that was being used at this national platform of the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the same platform that George Bush phoned into and sent his support and his blessing. So we're looking at a situation where, yes, it's going backwards 40 or 50 years, but it's actually going much, much further and much, much more fully. And just, you know, to get a clear sense of this, there is not a single quote-unquote pro-life organization in the country, not one, that advocates birth control. This is not about stopping abortions. This is about returning women to the role of helpmeet to their husbands, property of their fathers, subservient, obedient, docile, and breeders. And this is explicitly what is the ideology guiding the core of this movement, regardless of the fact that probably most of the people who are against abortion don't even understand that that's the full program they're supporting. And so, you know, I think to understand why this Jackson flashpoint matters so much, we have to look at the fact that across the country, ever since George Bush got into office, there has been a full court press of these people who have built up a movement against abortion as a doorway to get through a whole conservative, theocratic agenda nationwide. And they feel like if they can win this, then they've tipped the scales and they can bolt into place a lot of the other measures that they're going for, which we're also starting to see, the ban on stem cells, attacks on evolution in the schools, the president saying he doesn't believe evolution is real. bans on gay marriage.
Well, looking at him,
stuff all across the board. Yeah.
I was going to say, looking at him, I call it into question too,
yeah.
Just because, you know, he's one step away from, anyway. One final question. Where is the next action? I mean, as far as you guys are going to be in Jackson through Saturday, is that right?
That's
and then
right.
After that, what's happening after that?
Well, the big thing that's happening is October 5th, is we're actually drawing people forward. We're doing a bus tour that's going to continue through the rest of the month, going through red states. We're asking people to do their own mini bus tours or car tours to their neighboring towns. We're doing organizing between now and October 5th, but really saying on October 5th, we need to change the momentum and the direction of this country. We can no longer have a situation where we're fighting each outrage one at a time, clinic by clinic, torture revelation by torture revelation, Guantanamo, you know, disaster after another disaster, constantly losing ground to the whole onslaught bit by bit and still losing the war. We actually need nationwide for people to take the counteroffensive. And October 5th, we're saying no work, no school, no shopping. Come to worldcan'twait.org, get involved, file for a permit, organize a protest or a walkout or some kind of public manifestation in your town that day. We want hundreds nationwide of people pouring into the streets and saying, no, this has to be brought to a halt. We're not compromising with torture, and we're not waiting for the Democrats who, frankly, one after the other, right down the line, are approving Bush's extremes. They approved the war on Iraq. They approved the Patriot Act. They helped rewrite the laws to legalize Bush's spying after he got caught with the NSA. There's not a single Democrat who's shown up in Jackson to defend abortion. In fact, they're welcoming and starting to run anti-abortion candidates nationwide. This is a time when people actually have to step out themselves, and this is what we're calling for on October 5th. And this has to be a mass repudiation, a mass denunciation, and the world has to see it and feel it, that the people in this country are rejecting the legitimacy of the Bush presidency and building a movement to drive him out. The only way it can happen, through mass independent political action of millions of people.
Now, how can people support what you're doing right now? Is there a way that folks can donate toward the cause of you guys being down there?
Yes, that is a great idea. Thank you, Bruce. You can go to worldcan'twait.org, and that is our website. You can find updates. We're doing interviews with people down here every day, updating about the activities in Jackson and nationwide. On the right-hand side, we have a donate button. People can go, $10 makes a big difference, $20 makes a big difference, $100 can help us fund this bus tour as it travels, it can help us place ads to reach people nationwide who are looking for a way to resist and looking for somebody who's thinking like them. So it's worth it, and you could give $10 every month, you could give $100 every month, it makes a big difference. Also, sign up on our e-list or call our national office, all that information is on our website, and start organizing where you are. Hold a house party. Bring your friends together and talk about how you guys can contribute. Maybe, you know, everybody's got a platform of some kind, whether it be, you know, your office hour at work and the people you talk to there, or your kids' soccer team, all the other parents, you know, or if you have a church, if you have a cycling club, or just your friends, your email list. I don't know. People have different platforms to speak and to find each other, and it's really important to take the World Can't Wait call. It's on our website, and share it with people, read it together, discuss it, and figure out how are we going to act on this. We all have an obligation, and everybody can contribute something.
Sansara Taylor, thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you for all the work that you're doing down there to try to hold the fascist authoritarians at bay. Just from everyone here at the Head On Radio Network, we really appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Bruce. It's great talking with you again.
And hopefully we'll have you on sometime real soon. We do this every so often, quarterly, I guess. I don't
yeah, something like that. It's always fun. I really enjoy it. And I know you have great listeners, and I hope they'll be visiting us, worldcan'twait.org. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sansara. And that's our good friend Sansara Taylor from World Can't Wait. You can visit them online at worldcan'twait.org. and check out what they're doing. Apparently, there's going to be a massive action this coming October the 5th. And you know, if you want to find out more about that, go check them out there at worldcantwait.org. You know, just to tie all this up today, I would really like to just sort of say one, you know, a couple words before we go over to tonight's show with Bob, head on with Bob Kincaid, which is coming up next, our good friend Bob Kincaid. You know, and that is that, you know, we have reached a point in this culture, I think, where, you know, women have arrived at a time, you know, in the evolution of our culture where they're absolutely equal. And I would say, dare even say, better than equal. You know, we cannot allow the patrician idea, the theocratic idea, the fundamentalist idea, that, you know, religious thought should dictate public policy. We can't do that. Now, there are many of those on the right wing, on the far right wing, who would like to see a theocratic government get put into place and women's rights get decimated across the board. You know, we can't allow that to happen. And you know, women have come far too far in the field of equality as far as work, in the field of equality as far as, you know, how women are viewed in society, to turn backwards and to start rolling the clock back, or even in a different way, to see that kind of discrimination start up again, you know. And I, for one, will do everything I can to stand against that, primarily because of the fact that, you know, I came from a woman, and you did too. And you owe that woman your life. You do. You owe that woman your life. And if you can't honor her by trying to provide for an equally based society for her, then guess what? You're not honoring her. And that's what we're going to do. That's all we're going to say today about women's issues. You know, it was a bit of a stretch for me as a guy to do a women's issues show, but I did it anyway because I felt like it was a needed topic here on the Head On Radio Network. And hopefully real soon we'll have some women talking about women's issues rather than the guy doing that. You've been listening to the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Zach was my wonderful and able producer today. Did a fantastic job. Thank you, Zach. Our good friend John Fox announces the show and is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Our good friend Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida, keeps our